Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavirjam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Mabhidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Chapter 7, verse 41. Samsarayaham vibhuddhoham, samsarayaham vibhuddhoham, nishokastushta ityapi, jivaga utaravastha, jivaga utaravastha, bhantina brahmagayati, bhantina brahmagayati. Sandeep. Samsari, aham, vibuddha, aham, nishokaha, tushtaha, iti, api, jivagaha, uttara, avastaha, bhanti, na, brahmagaha, yadi. Just briefly, I'm going to repeat the argument that these verses have been working on. Okay? According to Vidyaranya, the way that he's presenting this, there are seven avastas, or seven states of experience, we could say, or seven states that the jiva goes through. There's ajnanam, ignorance, then avaranam, which is caused by ignorance, which is a covering, avarnam or avritti. Then there's vikshepa, the projection. That's a result of the avarnam. So avarnam, vikshepa come off of the ajnanam. Then there is the I'm sure I've got these right. Then there's the two jnanams, paroksha jnanam, aparoksha jnanam, right? Paroksha jnanam is indirect knowledge. Aparoksha jnanam, now we're up to five. Then shoka apagamaha, or shoka moksha, both mean the same. Shoka moksha, the removal of sorrow, the destruction of sorrow, and tushtihi, or triptihi, satisfaction. Those are the stages. Right? The argument that Vidyaranya is creating here is after having spent a lot of time using the tenth man story and all of these things, trying to make these stages clear. This is what a jiva goes through. Then he brings up this objection, or this point of clarification. He says like this, you say that there's ajnanam, ignorance, that causes this covering, which then, of course, causes the projection. The projection is dependent on the ajnanam and the covering. You can't have a projection. Like, for instance, I can't mistake a rope for a snake unless there's ajnanam there and there's a covering of the rope. I could never see the snake without that ignorance. And so then he says, so then the ignorance and the avarna, these two, they can't belong to the jiva. The ignorance and the avarna can't really have for its avasta the jiva, because the jiva is a result of it. Right? The jiva itself comes from the avarna vikshepa, so you can't say that the avarna, the covering, the ajnanam and the avarna are in the jiva, because the jiva is a result of it. So those two must exist. Those first two, the ignorance and the covering, must exist in Brahman. And then the vikshepa and everything that comes after that must exist in the jiva. So that's the objection that Vidyaranya is foreseeing. But if you say that, then you're saying that, well, Brahman then has ignorance. Right? Brahman has ignorance and is covered. Brahman himself or herself or itself has the ignorance and is covered. And because of that, the jiva comes into being. And so Vidyaranya doesn't want you to have this doubt. Of course, now he's screwed everybody up by creating the doubt, right? But now he's creating the doubt, so now he has to bring you out of this doubt, because everybody's going, what? So anyway, so then in verse 40, he says, you know, don't have this doubt. I don't want you to have this doubt. But these two avastas, that these two states, that you think these two states, the ajnanam, the ignorance and that covering, that those belong to Brahman, because you say they're superimposed on Brahman, you know, you say because of that they're arupa, but they're superimposed on Brahman. So those are Brahman's conditions. Don't say that. Don't have that doubt. Why? Why shouldn't I have the doubt? Because there isn't anything that isn't superimposed on Brahman. The entire Maya, the entire creation, the whole Maya Upadi is superimposed on Brahman. So you can go ahead and say that the Ajnanam and the Avarna, the ignorance and the Avarna are superimposed on Brahman, but then you can't say that these other things are not. Because the being that the entire Maya Upadi enjoys, the consciousness that the entire creation enjoys, that is Brahman. So it doesn't matter from what aspect you're looking at, it is a superimposed imposition on the one conscious being that is there. So he says, please don't have that doubt. Then he says, he goes like this, he's going to build on trying to make this more clear. He says, after the avarna and vikshepa, then ajnanam and the avarnam. The ajnanam goes like this: I am ignorant. I mean, I don't even know I'm ignorant. I'm so ignorant I don't know I'm ignorant. I'm just behaving in the world as a person, not thinking about it one way or the other. I'm just me. That's it. There's nothing else to be said. That's pure ajnanam. The avarnam, he says, is when I start to go off the track in my analysis of what the reality is. I go down the wrong path. An example of that wrong path is Brahman. There's no such thing as Brahman. What Brahman? There's no such thing as Brahman. I've never experienced any Brahman. That's avarna. Right? There is no Brahman. There's no such thing. I don't know where you got that idea. It's ridiculous. I've never seen anything. Have you ever seen Brahman? And none of you have ever seen Brahman. It doesn't exist. That's avarna. The vikshepa, example of the vikshepa is, I am a samsari. That means, when you say I am a samsari, means I am a karta, I am a doer, I am a bhokta, I am this individual person. You say there's no Brahman, so that means like saying there is no me. That me doesn't exist. There's no such thing. So then who are you then? Well, I'm a samsari. You know, I'm a limited being who is a doer, who is a thinker, who is born and dies. That's aham samsari. So he says, aham samsari. I am samsari. That's the vikshepa. Then the next one that the person can say, another thing he can say, the buddhaha aham. I am now enlightened. I now have self-knowledge. So you go from I'm a samsari to now I have knowledge. Okay, that's going to be the aprocha. Then he says, this is what happens after you have some knowledge. Remember, after the samsari, the vikshepa, what comes? The paroksha jnanam and the aparoksha. These two together, on the one hand, you'll see in more depth later, on the one hand, you'll say, if you have the paroksha jnanam, the indirect knowledge, oh, you know, there really is such a thing as the kutesta atma. There really is such a thing as Brahman. The Shastra says so. I have shraddha in the sat. In the Shastra, I know that that's true. I have absolute faith in that that is true. There is such a thing as Brahman. Paroksha jnanam. Aparoksha, I know that. I'm now a knower that Brahman exists. Aparoksha jnanam. I am Brahman. I not only know that there is a Brahman, I know that I am that Brahman. Aparoksha jnanam. So vibuddhoham, I have knowledge. I have direct, specific knowledge. Vishesha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge of my own being. Then I can say, nishokaha, for me there is no sorrow. Then I can say, tushtaha, I am completely full and satisfied. Okay, so all of these are jivagaha uttaravastaha. All of these avastas, from vikshepa on, from the samsari to the one who has knowledge, to the one who no longer has suffers, or who no longer has any sorrow, to the one who feels completely satisfied, all of these later avastas, all of these later states of being, right, states of experience that come after the ajnana, the ignorance, and the ignorance and the covering, all of these, you say, are jiva-gaha. All of these belong to the jiva. They're all located in the jiva, from the samsari on, okay? So he says that jiva-gaha, uttara-avastaha, bhanti. All of these shine clearly. All of these later states clearly belong, right, to the jiva. Then he says, na brahmagaha. They don't belong to Brahman. This is still the Purvapaksha. Yeah? They don't belong to Brahman. Yadi, if you say that, if you're going to say that all of these states belong to the jiva, all of these later states, then he says, next verse, tarhyajnyoham brahmasattva, tarhyajnyoham brahmasattva, bhane madrishtito nahi, bhane madrishtito nahi, iti purve avastecha, iti purve avastecha, bhase te jivage kalu, bhase te jivage kalu. He says, if you say that, all of these states, you say they belong to the jiva, not to Brahman. He says, tarhi, I'll do the sandhi, tarhi, agnyaha, aham, brahma sattvabhane, mat drishtitaha nahi, iti purve avastecha, bhasete jivage kalu. He says, so if you say that all the later states belong to the jiva, not to Brahman, then what about this? Agnyoham. I am ignorant. Aham agnyah. I am ignorant. Then, brahmasattva-bhane. Then, in reference to regarding the existence, the sattva of Brahman, and the bhane, and the shining of Brahman. Shining means that recognition of I am Brahman, the aparokshatva of Brahman. So in reference to the shining, to both the existence and the personal recognition of Brahman, then what? Madhrishtitaha nahi. From my experience, that's not there. Right? That's the avarna. So regarding the existence or aparokshajnanam of the immediate understanding of Brahman, what do I say? From my vision, according to me, there is no such thing. I don't see that. That's the avarna. That's what the person says, right? So if he says agnyaha, I am ignorant, and in my perception, there is no existence or appearance of Brahman. Thus, then purve avastecha bhasete jivage kalu. Then these previous avastas too, the ajnanam and the avarna, they also belong to the jiva, right? All of them belong to the jiva. None of this belongs to Brahman at all. If you say that the first one, that the latter ones, the jiva identifies and talks about, I am a samsari and I am a knower and I have knowledge and I am full and I am free from sorrow, all of these things. That same one says, I am completely ignorant and there is no such thing as Brahman and I've never seen it. So all of these different conditions are equally enjoyed by the jiva. Okay? So if you're going to give the first ones to the jiva, you have to give the other ones to the jiva also. That's the idea for the individual. Next verse. Okay?
Agnyanasyashriyo Brahma. Ityadishtanatya jaguhu, jivavastatvam ajnana, abhimanatvaravadisham.
Ha 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 See, that must be the Sunday for God. Yeah. Okay. Ajnanasya. No, you have to say. Ajnanasya Ashrayaha Brahma Iti Adishtanatya Jaguhu Jiva Avastatvam Ajnana Abhimanitvat Avadisham. You know, sometimes, usually for most of the verses, they will break pada by pada, so there'll be four quarters. But sometimes it won't break nicely. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're actually having to break it in the middle of a compound, and mm-hmm. that's where it gets a little hard sometimes. And this is true for this one. So anyway, now he brings up some important words here. He says, Ajnanasya ashriyaha Brahma iti. Brahman is the ashriya, is the basis for ajnana, is the basis, the ashriya, the adhishtana for ajnana. Adhishtana taya jagahu. From the bhasha, what you understand here is what he's talking about. Purva acharyaihi. By the previous acharyas in the whole sampradaya, the teachers, all the teachers that have gone before, they say that Brahman is the ashriya, is the basis of ajnana, right? It is the basis of ajnana. In what way, though? As the adhishtana. Brahman is the very basis of ajnanam. Ajnanam is the, has for it, it has for its basis Brahman as the adhishtana. What do we mean by adhishtana? It's a really important word in Vedanta. The adhishtana of something is the actual reality of what is there. Like, for instance, between the rope and the snake, what is the adhishtana? Is the satyam. The satyam is the adhishtana, the thing that is actually there, right? So in the rope snake, the rope is the adhishtana. The mithya snake, right, has the adhishtana for its being, for its basis. So when we say that Brahman is the ashriya of ajnanam, it means what is actually there, the being that is actually there, the ajnanam, is only Brahman, right? That's the truth of it. So you can say, with all of these examples we have, like if you say the man on the post, right? The man on the post. The post is the adhishtana. The mithya man is dependent on the post totally 100% for its being. In fact, the only thing that is there is the post. This is the thing to really understand. Even though we experience the man, even though you experience the snake, what is actually there? No. Now, that's what we mean by adhishtana, the actual thing that is there. And so for ajnanam, what is the being of ajnanam? Ajnanam doesn't have its own being. Then we would be into Sakya, into Dvaita. You have this ajnanam thing over here that has its being. And then you have consciousness over here, Brahman, which has its being. But there is no second being. Ajnanam doesn't have its own being, and so it must depend for its being totally upon Brahman. So Brahman is viewed as the adhishtana of ajnanam, as the adhishtana of maya, of the adhishtana of all that is. In this sense, Brahman is the reality, nothing else is. Okay? Brahman is the one reality, everything else is mithya. Everything else totally depends upon that Brahman for its being. So Brahman becomes the adhishtana. Okay? So, so Vidyaranya is saying, this is how all of the teachers have always taught it. And he has no problem with that. But he says, jiva avastatvam, the avastatvam, being the avasta, the ashraya, putting that in the jiva, which he says, I am doing, he says, avadisham, right? I am saying that the jiva is the ashraya for this. Why am I saying that? Because he says, abhimanitvat. Abhimanitvat means only in this way. This is where the point of identification is. If you want to say that Brahman is the ashriya, the as adhishtana for all that is, I totally accept that. Because Advaita, Vidyaranya is not Advaitin, he's Advaita. And so Brahman as the adhishtana, the very basis, the very ashriya, the very being for all that is, that's absolutely fine. But when we're looking at these different avastas, it is not Brahman who is enjoying these avastas, these states of experience. Brahman isn't enjoying these states of experience. The jiva is enjoying these states of experience. So it's the jiva is the one who has an identification, I am ignorant. The jiva is the one who says there is no such thing as Brahman. The jiva is the one who says, I certainly have never seen Brahman anyway. The jiva is the one who says, I am a samsari. The jiva is the one who says, I am liberated. The jiva is the one who says, there is no sorrow for me anymore. The jiva is the one who said, I am completely satisfied. Brahman doesn't say anything. For Brahman, none of these avastas. Brahman is not contained by any avasta. You know, because this Brahman, the one who says, you know, I was so sorrowful, and now I am free. I was totally ignorant, and now I have knowledge. From Brahman's standpoint, there is no such avasta at all. Brahman is the avasta. From Brahman's standpoint, Brahman is the only thing that is there. Now, this is also an Advaita. This is what's being touched on here is also something very, I don't know how to say it. It's amazing. It's easy, I think, to understand, again, if we use the meadow. I think that we could say and understand, we could all kind of be talking on the same language and understand what we mean. If we say, if I'm asking you to, say, imagine a meadow and it's raining, like we did in the meditation, the meadow and it's raining and there's people walking in the meadow, maybe even I have a body and I'm walking in the meadow also. It'd be a complex situation. But say now I ask you, please have that visualization. Please have that imagination. And now, okay, now you're sitting with that imagination. And now, what if I were to say, you know, there's really nothing there but you. Even though all of this complex experience is there, right? Really, it's not there at all. There's nothing there but you. It has no being. It has no substance. It has no reality whatsoever apart from you. You are the only truth. You are the only stability in that experience. Right? So now I said, now say you're still, you know, involved in this meditation of the meadow. And I'll say, notice in this meditation, in this visualization, that all of the bodies and all of the variety of experiences and sensations, there's a variety of sensations happening in this visualization that you're having. Do you notice that all of them, how ephemeral they are, in the sense that one sensation comes and goes and the other comes and goes and comes and goes. Sensations are born and gone, born and gone, born and gone. And now I ask you, what is actually there? What is actually there? And then you try to grab onto it and say, what is actually there? What is actually there? Then I say, well, that is what we call Maya. That's what we call Maya. There is nothing that's really actually there, except for me. I can say it is a manifestation of knowledge. It's a three-dimensional visual from all of the beings within the visual, right? There's a certain order to it. There's a certain reality to it. But from the standpoint of me, what is actually there in truth other than myself? Even experientially, you can't find anything substantial there. Now that is, I think that is pretty clear The truth of that is pretty clear when we're viewing it. When we're viewing that reality in terms of an imagination that's taking place in my consciousness, I can viscerally recognize the truth of my own being as being the substance and the truth of that imagination. And I can understand if I say, of that imagination, you are the Adhishtana. You are what is actually there. The whole imagination, every single part of it, is nothing but your being. Enjoys nothing. Your being is what is actually there. Right? So you are the Ashraya, you are the Adhishtana, you are the truth of the whole thing. But now if I go within the imagination and say, but look at all of the individuals within the imagination. For them, they can have so many different experiences from the standpoint of the upadhi. Right? From the standpoint of their upadhi. If they're ignorant, all they know is that they're an individual within that meadow. That's all they know. I'm just an individual here within the meadow. If they're trying to philosophize about the meadow or about the reality, they might say, some people say there's some infinite self. I've never seen one. I don't think that's true. Yeah. I'm just this person here who am acting and doing and living my life. You know? Then that being in the meadow gets a guru. And the guru explains, you know what, this is just imagination of yourself. You know? And tries to make that completely understood. Now imagine what it means. What it means for that individual within the meadow who's not the Ishwara of the imagination. What it means for that person within the meadow to gain knowledge. That is not as easy. If you're the Ishwara of the meadow, it's all obvious, right? But for the jiva within the meadow to recognize the truth of that one's relationship, of the jiva's relationship to the whole of the meadow, and the jiva's relationship to the self, which is the self, the truth of the whole, that requires a real vision. It requires a teaching. It requires a shocking awakening, right? So now, here, the whole Vedanta is teaching you that you are part of this meadow, which is yourself, that your being is the truth of this. And so, for us, we're the ones in the meadow as jivas here. We are the ones in the meadow who are looking around and saying, what do you mean? I'm in the meadow. I'm a jiva in this room. You know? And then somebody has made you understand, no, there's such a thing as a self which is limitless. Really? And then a teaching takes place that makes you see, I am that. What does it mean, though, to see that? It means for you to now recognize, to be able to let this body, mind, sense organs, feelings, thoughts, emotions, the ahankara, everything that makes the jiva, be part of the rain, be part of the room, be part of the creation, which it is, obviously. I mean, I see you are all part of the creation. So I'm part of the creation too. But all of these things that are part and parcel of Ishwara are actually part of the total knowledge which is illumined by my consciousness, by the consciousness which is me. Right? Just like all of this is an object in my awareness, you have to put the whole upadhi, the whole jiva, you know, has to join Ishwara. It has to be given over to Ishwara. And in giving the whole jiva over to Ishwara, then the awareful being that I am is released from that samsara. Right? Because subject-object relationship, all of this belongs to Ishwara. But then when I sit, say when we sit in meditation, and say we just like the meditation we did today, you relax everything just into the room, relax it into the rain. Let all of the upadhis become part of the whole, which they are. And then you just, in that moment of relaxation, you recognize the stability of your own being. The stability of your own being and the fact that there is no experience that's away from that stability. There's nothing that's away from it, that will ever be away from it, that ever can be away from it. And at the same time, awareness doesn't get wet. No? It doesn't get wet. It doesn't become sorrowful. It doesn't become happy. It doesn't get muscle cramps. It doesn't become hot. It doesn't become cold. Your being is always exactly the same. The very truth, the very adhishtana of this mithya. Adhishtana means the satyam mithya. The adhishtana is what is actually here. And so it's just simply a recognition of what is actually here. And what is actually here is not coming and going. No. And the only thing that can be, and the only thing that is this self, the me. This very personal me that when I say I am, but those words land personally on my own being. That being is not big, it's not small, it's not an object that I can look at, it's a self-evident nature of me. That me, that's why I like the meadow or the dream analogy. Of course, the Vedanta uses that all the time. Why it's so powerful is because if you can play with having an imagination or a thought, the relationship between consciousness and a thought, or consciousness and a daydream, consciousness and an imagination, right? That is the relationship of consciousness to the universe. That is, you get to experience. If I ask you to imagine something, you have consciousness plus that imagination. For a moment, you're Ishvara. You are Ishvara in reference to that imagination. Do you see how that is? Because the imagination, see, if I ask you to imagine a universe, the imagination comes from you. The Maya, that's your Maya. The Maya projects as the creation. And you are the very self of that creation. It has nothing apart from you. It resolves back into you. It comes and it goes. It comes and it goes. Nothing happens to you. Why doing an exercise or a meditative exercise is good, like that is so good, is because it gives you a chance to really differentiate what comes and goes and what stays. I always stay. And then just to see, if it can be true for an imagination, it's true for the universe. If I am the changeless self to an imagination, the changeless, non-dual, non-objectifiable self to an imagination, I am that to the universe. Because the conscious being that you are, if it's not an object in the universe, if consciousness is not an object in the universe, right, it's not going to be subject to the nature of the universe. See what I mean? If consciousness is not a thing in the universe, right? Consciousness is, but it's not an object in the universe, then the universe has to be within it. Like this. If consciousness is something, like for instance, obviously I can't be an object in the universe, right? Because then I would be aware of it. But I can say the same thing, you know, about space itself. Space itself is something that belongs to the universe. And I can't be an object in space either, right? Space is something that I objectify. But it doesn't objectify me, I objectify it. If I objectify space, right? If I objectify space itself, then where is there size or dimension or change for me? If I can objectify, just think about it, if I can objectify space, space is not in me, right? In other words, I'm not part of space. If I don't have space, if my swarupa, if my nature doesn't have space, then I'm not big or small. These concepts don't apply to me. There's no dimension for me. And so then what is the nature of that self in reference to my imagination or in reference to the universe? This might be too big of a jump, but anyway, we'll get back to it later. But it's the truth. This is the thing that needs to be seen. Just go one more round. If you recognize that your body and mind and sense organs, right, are objects in this universe, they're known to you, which they are. We all have to be able to say that. But if every person says that, if you say your body and your mind and your sense organs, and your thoughts, your emotions, even your ahankara, that's known to you. All of these are objects of awareness that you can describe and talk about. They all exist within the creation. Your mind and your body, your sense organs, your thoughts, everything, all that exists within the duality. All of these are experiences. We all say exactly the same thing. Yes, all of these things are experiences. They all are objects. They all exist within duality. So everything, in fact, that differentiates us one from the other are objects within the creation. They're all objects within Maya. Every single thing. Every part of me is different from you. Every part of my body is different from you. Every part of my thumb is different from my little finger. Every single thing in the creation is different from everything else. So we can say in that way, there's no end to the difference and the division that all beings enjoy one from the other, let alone one body. Every part of one body is different from every other part also. It's infinite division. But all of the things that you're throwing into the creation, well, that belong to the creation, and rightly so, you know, that differentiate us, all of those things belong to Ishvara. But what is the one thing that can't be objectified and thrown into the creation as part of it? Is the self, is consciousness, the me. Because there's no way to objectify me. I'm already self-evident consciousness, but I can't separate that consciousness to have a subject-object relationship with it to also throw that into the creation. And so there can't be a differentiation between you and me in terms of being, in terms of consciousness. Because I can't separate it to make it go in to exist within as an object within duality. And so this me, this very me that I am, can only be one because it's not an object in the creation. There's no way to make me different from anybody else or to make me different from myself. In fact, when you're sitting in meditation and you're just being consciousness, you try to make it change, try to divide it in half, try to objectify it, try to make it be anything other than what it is. You can never do that. But the more you recognize that you can never do that, that you can never make your being be anything other than what it is, no matter how hard you try, you know, or you can't put a bag over it either. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it. It just simply, you are what you are, and that's the end of it. Once you realize that, and that it's not an object that can be acted upon within the creation, and then I realize that that self is you, and 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 is in fact the rain. That self is the adhishtana, right? That is the truth. That is the invariable that's there in, as the very self of all experiences. That's what has to be recognized over and over and over and over again, because the mind gets lost. Right? The mind, the body, and the sense organs, which are part of this Maya, it gets lost in the Maya. Right? It gets lost in the Maya, which it's a part of. Right? It's not like your mind isn't a part of the Maya. It's a part of it. And it gets lost in it. Right? And so that's why Vidyaranya is saying all of these states of experience, from being just totally ignorant to being a wise person, All of these all exist within Maya. They all belong to the jiva, right? To each individual jiva has to go through gaining knowledge. And as you gain knowledge, you graduate, right? From being an ajnani to being a jnani. The ajnani is the samsari. I'm a limited being trying to make my way through the world. The jnani is I'm a limitless being, the very adhishtana of this whole creation. I am the self of this whole. There is no sorrow for me because there's no change for me. There's nothing for me other than what I am, the wholeness that I am. I don't become happy. I don't become sad. The nature of my being is much more than all of that. It's much more than being happy. Happy in the sense of, oh, now I'm happy, but I'll be sad in the next. Much more than that. It's the very wholeness of myself. It's the one that is more valuable to me. I am the one that is more valuable to me than any state of experience. Because if I'm not there, who cares about the state of experience? Right? If I'm not there, then what state of experience is there? Who cares? You know? The one that is the most dear, the most valuable to me is the very being that I am. And it is that being that is Brahman, that is totally free, that is not subject to any type of coming and going. And so the person who recognizes that, that person we say is a jnani. Has Brahman just become a jnani? Brahman hasn't become a jnani. Brahman has always been always the same, exactly the same. Who's become the jnani? The samsari that was the ajnani. The jiva that was the ajnani. What makes a jiva a jiva? Ajnanam. Maya. Right? So bondage and liberation and happiness and sorrow and all of these various variety of states, they all belong to the Maya. They all belong to the, and the jiva is the one who's suffering all of these things. Okay? And the jiva who is suffering all of these things has Brahman as the adhishtana. Right? The jiva who's suffering all of these things, what is the self of that jiva? Brahman. Me. The me who's never suffering at all. Right? The me who's illumining all the suffering. You know, it's just like the sun is so brilliant and it's illumining all of the rain. The sun, remaining as it is, illumines the rain and the storms and the sunny weather. It simply illumines what is there. And I am like that. I illumine what is there. If there's ignorance there that the jiva is suffering from, then I'm lighting that up really well. And if there's ananda or a moment of joy that's there, I'm lighting that up. But what is it for? What if the jnani recognized is, I am the one that's lighting all this up. I'm not what's lit up. I am the very being that lights it up. Right? So the ahankara, the point of identification, changes to me the one that is stable, that is the truth of all of this, rather than the one, the changing phenomena that is continually being lit up. Okay? So I am the self that is the adhishtana, you know, that lights up all of this, the conscious being that is the truth of all of this. Not the things that are lit up. The things that are lit up are the nitya, right? They have no being at all apart from me. In fact, sometimes it's a really beautiful meditation when you're just sitting there and you're having whatever experiences are coming through, whatever thoughts are coming through in your mind or feelings or emotions, whatever sensations are there in your body as your body is relaxing, whatever sounds are coming in from outside or how the air might be touching your body or the coolness of the weather might be chilling you. All of those experiences are those sensations, right? You see, do they have any being? You can almost say, you have to say that they're here because we're experiencing them. But you can also say they're really not here. Now, what I mean by that, because I don't want you to go around and say, oh, there really is nothing here. But there really is nothing here.
When can we say that?
Now, listen. If you have an imagination and I say, you know, there's really nothing there that has any... has any kind of substance. This is what the wonder of Maya. I can say that about this creation. There's nothing really here but me, just me. But it's so complex and so intricate and so wonderful and so beautiful, so orderly. Such an infinite manifestation of knowledge. It's an infinite Ishwar. It's an infinite manifestation of knowledge. It's nothing. It's absolutely incredible and amazing. And all of that. But then, I am what is actually here. And what is actually here is changeless. So, what does that make this that's all changing? You can't find it. If you go to look for it, you can't find it. That's the Maya. So when you do the etymology of Maya, it's Yama Iti Maya. That which is not, that is Maya. Yama Iti Maya. That which is not, that is Maya. So when you start taking that literally, because here we are experiencing all of this and it's all very organized and orderly, but can I say Yama Iti Maya? That this really that we experience is only myself. Is only myself, as Vidyaranya says, which is Kritastha. It means it's absolutely changeless. So can I recognize the changeless in the changing? All through the Bhagavad Gita, as we'll be getting more into the verses of the Bhagavad Gita now, Krishna is always saying, you have to recognize the akarma in the karma. That which is changeless in the changing. That which is changeless in the changing. So even right now, right here, I am that which is changeless in the changing. And the changeless in the changing, there is nothing that's changing that's away from the changeless. That's the drishti. So, okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
I have a question about the actually I've been thinking about it. Because when the sixth stage of being free from sorrow.
Yeah.
So then, like, the self is free from sorrow, obviously. And then, but then we say, like, that these states are for the jiva. So the free from sorrow state, I would assume, really refers to the state of the mind of the jiva. The self is free from sorrow, but if the free from sorrow that's being spoken of in the seven states belongs to the jiva, then it must refer to the mind of the jiva. So I guess what I'm sort of wondering is that then somehow it's like the mind, should the mind of the jiva kind of, is that like sort of almost like an exhortation or something to do nididhyasana and really kind of just more and more understand that, you know, bring that sour, that lack of sorrowfulness, to see that more and more, that that's the self, that's who you are, and somehow that the mind will rest in that more and more. Because, you know, because this kind, these seven things, they're for the Jesus.
Okay. There's two ways of thinking about that. One is, say with the vikshepa, the jiva says, I am a samsari. Okay. If the jiva says, I am a samsari, what that means, and if it's like an abbreviated form of saying, I am this physical body, I am this mind, I am this body-mind complex. And so there's an anyonya adhyasa, that mutual superimposition between the conscious me and the states of experience. There's no differentiation. So that's what makes the person a samsari. Now for the one who says, you know, I am, as later we'll see, he says, I am nitya mukta, I am always eternally liberated. That's my being. Now, for that person who has knowledge, that viveka is there. The ahankara is now, relates to the swarupa, the very nature of the Atma. That nature of me, that self-evident nature of me, is always there, illumining whatever vritti, whatever state of mind is there. So there's a differentiation. So the ananda, which is the swarupa ananda, the wholeness of myself, is its own experience. It's not being given to me by the mind. It is there no matter what the mind is doing. And so in the purest sense, that jiva now recognizes aham brahmasmi, but recognizes the constancy of myself and my own being. That being is nitya sukha. It's always free. It's always full and complete. Okay, so in that way I can say, from the standpoint of myself, I can say there is no sorrow for me no matter what's going on in my mind. And that's the truth of my experience, because of the self-evident nature of being. Clear? Okay, so now there's another level. What has ever caused sorrow in the mind? Why is the mind sorrowful? Because I want this or I want that to be different. It's not going the way I want it to go. That's what causes the stress in the mind. Okay, so that stress in the mind that's brought about by my needing something to be different so that I can relax and be happy, that stress drastically reduces. There can still be unconscious things and then just the mind habitually falling out in this way and that way, but you are easy to bring it back. And the mind doesn't have the same ever again, that same type of tension that's brought about by the absolute reality of the oneness between, for the Ajnani, of the oneness between my being and the mental state, right? And the mental state's absolute dependence upon the world to change, right? That's gone. When that is gone, the tension that the mind, the same type of tension that the mind used to have, isn't there anymore. You can't get that back, in fact. And so, even though you might have pleasure and pain passing through the mind, it doesn't have the same reality because the self is there and the viveka is there. And so on that level also then, the quality of the thoughts changes because your knowledge is different. And the knowledge, because of the differentiation of yourself, changes the quality of the mind. But because the mind, by its very nature, is changing, and it can still have the whole gamut of experiences, you know, I would never say my mind can never have sorrow, but I would say that I will never have sorrow. Because even in spite of whatever thought is there, I'm still there. And that me that is still there, my mind is awake to. And nothing can, it can never not be awake to it. Because there's been enough manana like that. So I think it's better to if you're going to just say that that's a condition of the mind, that's dangerous. Because then we're looking for the moksha.
Which is the condition?
That I'm looking for the mind to always be happy, to always be full, to always be satisfied. The fact is the mind is always happy, full, and satisfied because that is the nature of the self. And that self is predominant. But the self is happy, full, satisfied because that's its swarupa, not because of a happy or sad vritti in the mind. But when the mind has come to recognize that self, what it needs for its security, for its wholeness, for its reflection of ananda, all of these things, it has there for it all of the time. You see? And so its condition does change. Does that make sense? Do you see the distinction I'm making?
Yeah, I do. I just think it's sort of interesting that he's pointing out that these particular states are for the jiva, when in a sense...
Because say if the jiva says, look at the difference.
Yeah.
The jiva says, I'm a limited samsari subject to sorrow, birth and death. That's vikshepa, okay?
Yeah.
Then the jiva says, I am free of sorrow. I am free of sorrow. I am always nitya muktaha. I am always liberated and full and free. I am completely satisfied. There's nothing that I want. Why is there nothing that I want? Because I'm everything. Right? And the very... But see, the thing is, the very being of yourself, of the nature of me, of consciousness, is full.
So it's kind of like at some point along there, when the aparoksha jnanam takes place, then there's like a switch of identity, and then you can start saying, I am...
Yeah,
you know,
that's it. There's a switch of identity. The ahankara, the ahankara recognizes it. It now lands on me, instead of on landing on this mutual superimposition. Yeah,
so that's
right.
You have to be able to say that, or the teaching... Are you not complete?
Right.
Yeah.
If you can't say that, then you still, the ahankara is still identified here.
Yeah.
But that's why the teaching is coming at so many different angles to kind of cut these identifications.
So it's not saying the mind of the jiva will always be free from sorrow. What it's really saying is that the mind of the jiva has recognized that who I am is free from sorrow.
And that who I am is free, that's free, one who is free from sorrow. Is totally present to the mind.
Right.
Right? There's, I think, you know, there's, you know, there were, how do they say in Gestalt, there's the figure ground. You know? What happens is that the self becomes more, you know, the ground becomes more the figure, or how, you know.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah.
You notice that one more than the other.
Yeah. Yeah, it becomes, yeah. And part of why that figure ground type of, you can use that type of language, is there is because it's so pleasing to the mind. You know, it's the mind revels in that fact, the fact of the stability of my own being. And because the mind is reveling in it, it's accounted for. So if the mind pays attention to that just naturally, once it's seen it, you have to see it, right? But once the mind has seen it, then it tends to revel there, to really enjoy that, as opposed to the mind that hasn't seen that, where there's just one entity there, then it's going out here within samsara, trying to find a place to relax in, to rest in, you know, to find comfort in. Where the jnani's mind isn't doing that at all. Really, not that you don't want comfortable situations, I don't mean that. But it already has that place. You know? So the self becomes more predominant to the jnani. Not that it's always exactly the same, actually. Always,
well, what do you mean by more predominant?
Only in your recognition. Say, normally your mind is busy, busy, busy,
you
know, out here. And there's never been a differentiation between the mind stuff, the mind, and the being, the very being of the mind. There's that differentiation, hasn't been there.
So if you can notice the changelessness of your being, that makes it predominant then.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Usually it's not noticed at all.
No.
You know? But what about when it is noticed? Mm. When it is noticed, then what becomes more and more noticed. The more it's noticed, the more it's noticed. Mm-hmm. And what you notice is that whatever the experience is, whatever it is, doesn't make any difference what it is. What is predominant is the changelessness of me. Of the me. The me, and the me becomes less and less just identified with a physical body. It's the very me which all experience takes place in. And that me is Ishvara. It's that me that had before only been identified and totally taken to be one with your body. Now you recognize that very me which is me, it is that me that is Ishvara. And then this universe just starts being more and more appreciated as a manifestation of knowledge, and you become more interested in it as a manifestation of infinite knowledge, which is your very being. And you see how things work out and suits out, all becomes much nicer. Yeah.
We like to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all becomes much nicer.
Yeah. Alrighty.